to the King. Hello, podcast listeners. My name is Kelly Richardson Lawson. I'm a mother, a wife, and an entrepreneur. I started the Sunrise Project after our beautiful teenage son attempted to take his own life.
Truth is, I'm tired.
My husband and I felt despair, isolation, and immeasurable pain. I knew in my heart we needed a place for Black parents to share their struggles, find mutual support, and help our beloved children who struggle with mental wellness, addiction, or both. Each weekly podcast features an expert who shares their knowledge and takes questions from parents and children.
Take me to the King. I don't have much to bring.
The Sunrise Project allows Black families, like ours, to find comfort in knowing that we are not alone. While the purpose of the Sunrise Project is to share, support, and uplift, this conversation is not a substitute for medical advice. Finding the right healthcare professional for your family's specific needs is crucial. If you do not feel seen or heard, you should speak to more than one professional to find the right fit.
Take me to the King.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to our weekly Sunrise Project call. Really happy that you're all here. And our intention is that we find a moment of peace during our very busy week, and that we can learn from one another in a safe space that's filled with love, compassion, and a mutual desire to heal our families and ourselves. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. I'm now going to turn it over to Sharon Green, and she's going to share her story with her son, who's also on the phone, Ezekiel, and how they have continued to manage with love and compassion through a bipolar disorder. And so I'm going to turn it over to Sharon now.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So today, my son and I, Ezekiel, who is 23 years old, soon to be 24, we're just going to have a conversation for about 20 minutes, sharing with you our journey. Once he was diagnosed, we'll give a little backstory first, and then we're just going to have a time of period of reflection and bringing you all up to the present. And then after that, parents and also students or young adults, feel free to ask us questions, and then we'll wrap up. So, Ezekiel, August 5th, 1996, the greatest joy, one of the three greatest joys in my life, was born to his dad and I, and he has been amazing in teaching us valuable lessons throughout our lives. And then at the age of 18, we got a phone call that we needed to come up to Swarthmore College, where he was attending, because they thought that there were some things going on and needed for his parents to come. So we drove from Atlanta to Philadelphia, well, out of Swarthmore, Pennsylvania, and went to meet Ezekiel. At that time, he did look a little despondent and kind of out of it, but still his lovable self. And after some conversations for about a few hours, we decided to turn back around and bring him back to Atlanta. After that, during the trip, he slept most of the time, and in and out of conversations, we decided that it was best for him to see a psychologist. He was already diagnosed with ADD, and we knew that, but there was some of the things going on. And got back to Atlanta about 8 o'clock that morning. I got a phone call at 9 from the psychologist and asked us if we could be there at 10 o'clock. And at 10 o'clock, we raced over to the psychologist's office, and she talked to both of us. We were in the room together. And she said, well, you know, this really doesn't look like ADD. This looks like you're in manic mode now. And, oh, by the way, Ezekiel is a psychology major, biology major, and I believe a neuroscience minor, Ezekiel, is that correct?
I majored in psychology and biology.
Correct. And you took a lot of neuroscience classes?
Yeah, a lot of neuroscience classes, a lot of health classes.
And what was our reaction when she said she thought that this was bipolar?
It was kind of a little bit of a relief.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was a big relief for real. I don't know if you want me to talk more about that, but
you can go ahead. What do you mean by relief for both of us? For you, me, what?
I think for both of us. I mean, yeah, it was a relief because you know, you came up to Swarthmore that time. I'm sorry, I'm just talking from like remembering the situation myself. And you guys had came up to Swarthmore that time in the spring of 2015, but I had already been having a lot of unanswered problems with schoolwork for, you know, probably for the 2 years prior to that. I would say the first time I felt depressed was when I was a senior in high school. I don't know if you remember coming to visit me while I was in Exeter that senior fall and all the trouble I had with, like...
Yes, I do remember that.
Yeah, I think that was the first time
You believe that that was the onset of it?
Yeah, I definitely think so, yeah.
And so the other piece for us as a family is that, as Ezekiel shared, he did have some disconnect, so to speak. He did get into some trouble at school. He was in boarding school at Philip Exeter, and I went there and realized that while he was a young senior, he graduated high school at 16, there were some emotional things going on. We just didn't really understand. And so what we tried to do was just have him have a reset, kind of like the COVID time. So he came home for the summer and just relaxed. And then going on back to Swarthmore, you know, we thought that things were fine. So once he was diagnosed, we came home, and as he said, we had a sense of relief. And in that relief, it wasn't like, oh my gosh, that was easy. It was more of, we now know. At the time, my then husband and I were separated, and he came to live with me. And during that time, I noticed that he was manic. He was very intrusive in my personal space and physical space. He has two other siblings, two younger brothers. They also noted his erratic behavior. And so then I recommended that you do what, Ezekiel? Where did you take a journey to?
I went to Vipassana. And I don't know if I remember this correctly, but I think you had signed me up for Vipassana, if not already before you had gotten me from Swarthmore. As soon as I got back, you signed me up.
Oh, that is correct. That is correct. And so Vipassana was a 10-day meditation retreat. And so Ezekiel went and did meditation for 10 days, knowing that he was now diagnosed, but he was still, we did not understand what manic meant. And so he stayed there for 10 days and did silence, no talking, and meditation. And how was that for you, Ezekiel?
It was, to be honest, it was completely transformative. I never had been introduced to a perspective on the mind like that. And I think it's a perspective that you don't really get to see that often outside of those type of contexts. And so that I think really did change a lot in terms of just being introduced to a certain type of way of thinking.
How did you feel? Were you still in manic mode? Do you feel that you... did it calm your senses? What was it doing for you?
Well, to be honest, like I might be slightly, using the word manic and depressed are kind of funny words for me because they have like a negative connotation. I think you might, and I remember mentioning this the other day, that like, you know, manic and depressed, I think are interchangeable words we use for like, I wish we had a better word to talk about whether or not a person's, like whether or not one's whole being is healthy. I think that I definitely have the tendency, not even the tendency, but I think it's definitely true that if I'm unhealthy, in other words, if I'm manic or depressed, you know, I might have a lot of behaviors that are hard to deal with, such as like screaming, crying, just being a difficult person to be around. And like, you know, making erratic behaviors and stuff, even having a hard time speaking. I've even realized now that like sometimes I have a hard time speaking and it's really because I'm depressed. Like being depressed can sometimes give me a hard time with finding words. So these symptoms, being unhealthy for me comes up in a lot of different ways. I think back then, 2015, it was kind of coming up in a more raw way. It was coming up in like, I remember I was like being obsessed with certain things. I remember I wouldn't stop talking to you about certain things. I remember one time I screamed and cried because you were on the phone and I wanted to talk to you. Yeah, it was, I just remember really blowing up about that. It was funny to think about it now. Yeah.
I did hang up the phone, right?
No, you didn't.
I did not? Oh, okay.
Well, maybe you did at some point, but man, like that, I think that really is like the way, the type of mind that I said I was in, you didn't hang up fast enough.
Okay. And so that's what happens, right? You get these triggers, and how was it for you when you would get these triggers, and if I responded immediately or did not in your mind, did that help you or did that make it worse for you? Because what's happening is that we have a lot of people on the line who have family members and siblings that have erratic behavior and they don't know how to address it. So how did I help you or not help you or learn to help you with that?
Man, the thing is, you're talking to somebody, and mommy, you know this, mommy. You know this more than anybody else. But you're talking to someone who's still dealing with it.
Absolutely, and that's what's so beautiful about this process, that we're being in raw conversation. You know, this is not scripted in any way, and you have been going through some stuff right now in this time frame. So, you know, they're getting a really beautiful view of how we operate during your times of depression and manic, or as you would say, imbalance in your body. And so how have I attributed to it or calms you down? Like, I know there have been many times that we've just danced, right, via FaceTime.
Yeah, I mean, now that I'm thinking back on it, I think that generally there was just a lot of openness. There was just a lot of openness.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
There was a lot of listening. I think listening, I cannot even just, listening is so key.
Yeah, we've had marathon conversations, huh? 4 or 5 hours.
4 or 5 hours, but then it's not, I feel like it's like I'm taking myself back to being in the house in College
mm-hmm.
Park. And just thinking about what types of things that were really good for me. I think just being in an environment where I had time,
mm-hmm.
like you weren't putting any pressure on me to like necessarily do things in a given
right.
day.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was nice.
Well, we had routines, right? Not scheduled, but we had routines.
Yeah, not scheduled. And honestly, Mama, you gave me the Vipassana thing was honestly probably not a small thing.
The meditation time.
Yeah, that probably wasn't. Yeah, and just to like just think about the timeline. I mean, we're talking about I get home maybe last week of March. I have a doctor's appointment. Maybe like within that same week of me coming back, I forgot exactly the exact timeline, but I was at the meditation thing almost a week after I had gotten home, and the meditation retreat lasted for 10 days.
Yeah.
So for the majority of the time that I was spending in the house, we also had this like meditation practice that we both like anchored our days around kind of. Because I remember we were both meditating like every day, I think, especially after, like right after I came back. Yeah.
Yeah. And then so during this time period, Ezekiel, the diagnosis came. We hadn't had an opportunity to get scheduled for a psychiatrist. He wasn't on any medication. So he was, as he says, raw in it. And that was a lot. That was a lot for me. There was a lot of intrusiveness, but because of meditation, you're absolutely right. I was able to. So then Ezekiel A. met with.
Well, not even just meditation. So this is more just like you were just like, mommy, like you were literally in like. I feel like there's just not. I feel like we don't want to give people like a bad picture, but it's like, mommy, I feel like you do so much. Honestly, like I feel like I'm trying to figure out if I can give a great example of, because it's not really about big moments like crying. Mm-hmm. I feel like it's like about little moments. I guess something that I'll share that, you know, honestly, this could have probably been, depending on how you talked to me about this thing at the time, like probably could have changed a lot. You remember I was really obsessed with going back to Swarthmore to visit my friend.
Mm-hmm. I do. You know,
like, I was probably, like, manically obsessed with it. Like, I probably was, like severely obsessed with it. Like, I remember I used to think about it all the time. And
what did I do to help you?
Well, you didn't make me wrong for it. That's one thing. You definitely could have, like, you know, told me to not think about it ever and to not talk to you about it ever. But, no, you always, like, kind of allowed me to talk about it and listened and just, like, kind of just, like, didn't really make me feel bad about what was going on. I think that was super important. I was living in a house where I didn't necessarily feel bad about myself. I didn't feel like there wasn't a lot of, like, oh, now you need to fix yourself. It was a lot more of, oh, now you have this time for you to chill, for you to, like, take some time and pay attention to, like, what can possibly help you do better. And then also, like, we were getting introduced to meds. I think meds were super important.
Yeah, meds. Yeah. So ZQA was then, we finally found, well, the first psychiatrist was a little intimidated by you, right? Remember, she realized how intelligent you were and how knowledgeable you were about all of the medications. So she gave us a list, well, gave him a list of meds and said, well, you choose. And because he had all these understandings of the medications and what the side effects were, and he knew some of the doctors that had created different procedures. And so she was just like, oh. So we knew that that was not the psychiatrist for us. And then he went and found another one. And Ezekiel, is it okay that I share that, you know, you had some extracurricular activities? And she was very, this particular psychiatrist, Ezekiel, was very open about what he was doing. And she made sure that the prescription drugs that he had would not coincide, because we couldn't promise, or he didn't promise that he would not use other modes of activities. And so with that said, Ezekiel started taking the medication, and I lost my Ezekiel. He didn't have this beautiful zest. He was just kind of quiet, and I cried, and I said, you know what, we can run away to Amsterdam, to the Netherlands, because I had researched on the Netherlands and how they deal with mental health disorders. I said, we could just leave now. You don't have to take any medications, because I did not see my son anymore. And Ezekiel reassured me that the medications he was taking, that this was a process. This was a time. And he explained to me what each drug was doing and how that would go. And he was right. It leveled out, and he went back to school and did okay for a period of time. And then we hit rock bottom. Do you want to talk about that at all, or share anything else about that, Ezekiel?
Well, I feel like this is a good transition. I don't know if anybody listening to the call is taking stimulant medications, but stimulant medications, man, are no joke, especially taking them for an extended period of time in order to do well in school. This is no joke, but it's also kind of necessary, depending on, you know, what type of kid you are, or what type of, you know, if you're a parent, what type of child you have. Because for some people, it's really hard to get schoolwork done, so the stimulant medications can be really helpful. Kind of like, you know, average adult drinks coffee in the morning. It's like a little similar to that as far as the feeling. So it's a very helpful thing, but, and I'm sorry, I'm saying this to transition into what my mom is talking about. So basically, you know, 2015, you know, that's when I first started taking stimulants. My mom did not like the way they made me. However, I was preparing to go back to school, and I knew that stimulants would be helpful. I will also add, I was also taking a mood stabilizer as well. That was helpful as well. I think the mood stabilizer was very, very helpful. But the stimulants were very helpful in helping with my productivity. Rock bottom happens about 2 years later when, you know, and this is my opinion, I think that taking the stimulant medication for over, like, pretty consistently for, like, 2 years, I feel like had, like, honestly a very dramatic impact on my mental health in a particular way. And I started running into, like, a lot of emotional instability, and I lost a job opportunity that was kind of close to me. And, you know, also I'm learning, I'm just increasing my knowledge base on just, like, health-related topics, science-related topics, creative-related topics. So I'm just, like, also just learning more, have more stuff to work with in my head. And I lose a job, and I think a combination of all the pressure and all the stress that I've been putting up, that I've been dealing with for the last, like, 2 years in college, plus the stimulants medications, just, like, the wear and tear those can have on you, plus just the stress of wanting to do well after graduating from school, all kind of put me into a place where I was suicidal for, like, you know, months. I was very suicidal for a very long time.
And full disclosure, also, you know, your mom was with breast cancer, and your younger brother was the only one at home taking care.
It was a bad time. It was a hard time. Last, like, what was that, like, the last, like, it was from, like, the end of, from, like, 2018 to 2019 to the end of 2019?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a hard time.
And so now is a good time to share how siblings played a role for you, especially at that very dark moment. I was very intentional after Ezekiel's diagnosis for his brothers to understand that it was an illness, but it wasn't something that crippled him, and that if we embraced his beautiful mind and his juiciness and how he acts and his vulnerabilities and our vulnerabilities, that we could all make it. So we understood that Ezekiel could miss a plane, which he has. We understood that he might not care about hygiene for a day or two, and we'd remind him gently, but we never made him wrong for that. So his brother.
Wait, can we talk about the hygiene thing? Because that's, like, a serious, like, man, that is still to this day, I can't keep clean. And it really has to do with the fact that this is, like, a thing about being bipolar. That's hard to be clean. Not even hard to be clean. This is, like, that hygiene thing. Just shout out the hygiene, man.
Yeah. So a lot of times parents and siblings, you thinking that they're doing it just to bother you, but like he said, you know, there are different ways that we operate. And so what we were intentional, we meaning Ezekiel's family members, immediate family members, and also friends, and some who might be on the line now, we were intentional of accepting him for who he is, but also trying to set healthy boundaries that, okay, Ezekiel, enough. And then he would kind of like, oh, are you ready to share about siblings and how they supported you during the darkest moments, or would you rather not?
I mean, I can. I guess, I mean, just to describe, like, kind of what was happening, because, you know, the title was talking about bipolar depression and anxiety. I just want to have, just, like, provide as much context as possible, just because it's like, okay, you're talking about someone who's suicidal, but it's like, why was I suicidal? Like, what was happening? Well, I'm gonna just point out some things that I think I'm noticing. Is I'm noticing in myself that there's so many things that I want to say. Basically,
you're good. Take
almost
your time.
Overwhelming for me to talk about this stuff because it impacts my life so much, and I don't really get to talk about it. You know, I don't really get to talk about it. I feel like a lot of people, I feel like it gets talked about. I feel like my mental health gets talked about all the time, but I feel like it's not really ever the time where I get to talk about it and talk about what I feel like has been most impactful.
Mm.
And as far as the suicidal thing, like, something that was super impactful was the fact that, like, after I left school, this psychosis started that I had no idea how to maintain. And it's honestly, like, I've never, and it's kind of funny because, like, Molly, we literally have, you have not lived with me. Like, we got to live together for some time, but, like, we have not spent, like, more than a month together in the same place since this started happening. Yeah, and it was so bad. I really did not want to be alive. And, like, I was really trying to kill myself for, like, a couple of times. But, like, it was even after that for, like, months. Like, literally months. Like, so long. I would still really feel like I really didn't want to be alive. Like,
and
it was
that.
Because I was having this, like, overwhelming psychosis where I just thought everybody was talking about me. And I tell you, like, this is, like, not, like, as far as, like, getting real about mental health, like, when I got diagnosed with bipolar, I knew, was familiar with bipolar, and I was like, well, this means that there's going to be some, if I really do have bipolar, and this is what I thought when I was first diagnosed, that means that I would probably end up dealing with some type of difficulty with determining what's reality and what's not.
Mm-hmm.
And that didn't really start for so long, but then it started, a psychosis of itself, some sense, started after that, and it all made me suicidal. I'm sorry to jump around so much like that. It's just that is the reality of this.
No, it's because
I still haven't wrapped my head around.
I think what's important is that we think that there's an order to this process of just being, right? And there is no order. I mean, we put normalization around it in the sense that we think, oh, you get up in the morning, you brush your teeth, you put your shoes on or your clothes on and then your shoes on, and then you have breakfast and then you leave. But if someone does those things out of order, right, then it's considered abnormal. But there is no abnormalcy. It's what is it that is important for you and how can you manage and do for yourself? Unfortunately, when you go out into various communities and different societies, there's expectations. And I think that that's what you were bumping up against. Ezekiwe currently works in a neuroscience lab, has always been very into the brain and how we process. And so we've always had lots of conversations about thought and what's normal and what's abnormal and what is to be. And I've always encouraged him to take a time to breathe and do what is correct for him, and to live with integrity, not take anything personal. Please don't make any assumptions about who and what you think is going on, and always do your personal best. And so, as his siblings have also been told that, they were able to encourage and support him and do correction with love. So it's not always a beautiful thing, but it is a thing. I want to say that I'm so proud of Ezekiel, and I think that through each step of the way that he's gone, especially as a black male with bipolar, he has a lot to offer to those of us who don't know and are not living in his shoes, but those who are also doing the same. I wanted to honor the time, Kelly, to open it up for questions, comments, and just really thank you all for letting us have this raw conversation. Ezekiel, is there anything else you want to just kind of chime in and speak to while we allow people to come in and ask you questions?
I don't know.
Are you currently on medication right now? What's your routine?
Yo, I'm sorry. I'm about to be borderline inappropriate right here, but I am extremely, extremely sensitive about anybody asking me about what I do to help myself.
Why is that?
Because I might scream or something.
Oh, okay. Okay, and you have screamed. You have cried, haven't you?
Yeah, but I just feel like it's not, like, I just feel like I just feel like we're really underselling the seriousness with which this issue has to be taken in order to do anything about it.
Okay.
Like, in order for me to get to where I'm at right now, like, I've had to, like, it's been, like, a lot of reading. It's been a lot of practice. It's been a lot of, like, observation. It's been a lot of, like, like radical honesty. And it's been a lot of listening. It's been a lot of listening, like just a lot of listening. And listening is hard to do, because the best listening is when you take a moment where you really don't want to do something and you do that thing anyway. And it's like the difficulty, not the difficulty, it just, I cannot stress the amount of how hard work is what pays off. Whatever you put, it's like whatever you put into it is what you're going to get out. So if you're like, let's just put it in this way, right? I got into yoga, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of people get into yoga. You know, a lot of people might walk away from this conversation saying, oh, you know, I heard this guy say that doing yoga is really good for your mental health. Like, it's really good for your mental health. Probably one of the best things that I've tried so far. However, you know, you can go and do a couple of sun salutations that I think are really good. But, like, when I got into yoga, like, I really, like, sat down and, like, read, like, the Yoga Sutras. Like, I got into it. You know, you really get in what you put out. And in the Yoga Sutras, they literally say, it literally says, like, peace of mind is attainable for anybody. And the quicker you'll get there, it just depends on how hard you're working towards it.
Wow.
So
guess what, Ezekiel? Wait, you gave the formula.
it's out there, really. That's what I'm saying. You just got to read it. You'll find it.
You're so funny. So, Ezekiel?
Yes.
Hi. I just want to thank you and your mom. You are sharing life. You are bringing light. Some of the things that you said, it was like when you get up in the middle of the night and you're in a hotel room and you're trying to make your way to the bathroom and you maybe stub your toe or whatever, somebody turns the light on and all of a sudden you can see.
Yeah.
That's what you did today. People are not on this call by accident. We came here very intentionally, not having answers, having some answers, but to share the perspective that you shared. I just want you to know how generous and loving and open and how I received what you said. And I venture to say many other people on this call received it as well. So thank you. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Good morning. I just want to say the only way that I could really summarize your raw authenticity, you and your mother, is that it was such a great example of pure, unconditional, real love. Mm. And I'm just laying here with tears streaming down my face, because to hear you speak to your mother in such a grateful way, and to feel the strength that you had to, and still have to, you know, share this journey and really try to maintain I like what you said about, you know, you can't really tell other people how to necessarily go through this journey, because everybody has to find their own formula, their own, you know, prescription. But like your mother said, you in effect did share that. So thank you.
Yeah, man. Yeah, I'm overwhelmed.
Hello.
Hey.
Yeah.
Hello.
Hi.
Good morning. Just want to first say thank you to both of you for sharing your story. My journey is just beginning. I'm here in Atlanta, and I have a 17-year-old who was recently diagnosed with bipolar disorder. And my challenges and are just, I guess the word might be insurmountable at this point, and I do not want to take up too much time, but I, one of the major, major pieces of the equation for me is getting my son to a point of accepting that he has this, we'll just say condition for the lack of a better word, and understanding that it is not a death sentence. It is something that you can live with and have a very productive life, but there are things that you have to do in order to get there. And I am the one who primarily oversees the taking of his medication at this point. And he often states that, you know, I'm not taking this medication when I turn 18 because nothing is wrong with me. And that frightens me so. So my question is, and I don't know if you can answer it, but what did it take for you, because it didn't sound like you, Ezekiel, had any issue with accepting that, you know, bipolar was going to be a part of who you, of what you do. I don't want to say who you are. I don't know. What did it take for you to get to that point? I just don't know what to do, because he has to come to a point of accepting it. And as a mom and as a parent, of course, in anything, you want to give your child the opportunity to discover things for themselves, but you don't want it to be detrimental, you know?
Yeah. Mommy?
Well, first, I think from a non-clinical perspective,
yes.
You, mom, have to accept. You have to accept that he has to do this in his own time. I think you heard Ezekiel articulate that I gave him time. I gave him space. And I allowed him to be. I don't know if there are other siblings or other family or friends. I had dear friends that when I couldn't carry it, I gave it to them, and they were accepting. Once you start modeling that behavior of acceptance and he feels comfortable, then other things will happen. It will be a journey, though. It will be a tried and true journey. There were times Ezekiel wasn't compliant with taking his meds, and I was like, well, I'm not dealing with you today. He was like, but I want to. I said, well, I can't talk to you today. And like he said, you know, I would be on the telephone, and he would tell me, get off the phone. I don't want you to talk to anybody. And I would hang up because I knew that was what he needed that moment. But maybe the next time that might not be where I was. So if you can accept your son unconditionally, then he will feel safe to say, well, let me do the hard work, as Ezekiel has articulated. And there's no rush in this. There's no rush in this. And we don't use the word bipolar that much. I just say beautiful mind. And so you know, we can talk about those things, you and I, to help you accept it. But I would encourage therapy, talk therapy in a group session and also individual for you. The other thing that I didn't share, Ezekiel and I would always joke. So I have a sickle cell trait, and so I was really intentional about making sure that I didn't marry someone who had the trait, because I didn't want one out of four. Well, I didn't ask about mental health, and on his father's side, Ezekiel has several uncles and a few cousins who have bipolar disorder 1 and 2. So it was DNA predisposed. And so Ezekiel was like, well, mom, you checked the health, but you didn't check the mental part.
Yeah, that's not a question that we typically ask. Right, we check all the other stuff, but not that. But this is, thank you, Sharon and Ezekiel, for your conversation. And I do have a question for you, Sharon and Ezekiel. I just want to say this was a very important conversation. I certainly appreciate it. I love you guys, and I thank you so much for being so open and honest. I heard you say that, you know, you don't get a chance to talk about this, about what you're dealing with and what you live with, with others that your mental health gets talked about. And that was pretty profound for me. And I would like to know how, what it would look like for you, or what you see, or what you would like, and how you even function on a daily basis. Like, you have a job, you get up, you have some form of routine, some form of, you know, where you conform to authority and different things like that. So is it that the that, you know, your continuance of medication, how do you cope with just the regularness or the routine of the day? Particularly, you're not, you know, you're physically distant from mom. But if that makes any sense, like, if you can talk a little bit about that. And thank you again, guys. Sincerely appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks. I really want to just answer the question, just get straight into it. I can share a story about an ongoing issue where everyone at my job shows up at 9 o'clock, essentially. Me, you know, I show up, you know, 9:30, sometimes 10, you know, some days I might show up at like 10:15, 10:20, depending on the day. And so as far as like day-to-day things, I'm always basically trying to keep, in my day-to-day, I try to keep my schedule in relation to being at work at 9 o'clock in the morning. So something that helps with that is like exercising. So, because exercising helps me go to sleep at night. But say, for example, like, this is like kind of more the reality of what it is. And this is, I'm so sorry for jumping around so much, but this is like, this story has a lot of different things to see in it. As far as the reality of what it looks like for me getting to work on time every day, I usually don't. So what ends up happening is I end up having to have these conversations with people about, you know, what's the reality of like, what does it look like for me to get up in the morning? What does it look like for me to go to bed at night? Because those things can be really hard sometimes. Like, if I'm manic, I can stay up till whatever time. If I'm depressed, then I'll, like, sleep in and have a hard time getting out of bed. So what happened, though, there's this one story where I show up to work at, like, maybe, like, you know, past 10 or so. And I needed to – and honestly, this is a place where I kind of want to ask for advice from people who are, you know – have more experience than me. I share with my boss, I'm like, yo, I'm so sorry that I showed up to work late today. You know, I literally share with him what my morning looks like, as far as like, I'm like, yo, I woke up at 7:30, but didn't get out of bed until 8:30 because, you know, I just am depressed and it's hard for me to wake up. It's hard for me to get up out of bed in the morning. And like, you know, maybe I'll do some yoga in the morning, but sometimes that doesn't always like help with the little, like, I have a hard time focusing. So even that, like, getting a task done in the morning can be hard. It can be hard for me to go from brushing my teeth to putting my shoes on. Like, something in uh-huh. something might happen in the middle of it.
Uh-huh.
So I share this stuff with my boss, and I'm sharing it with him, saying, I literally had to say this to him, where I'm like, JP, like, literally, I'm trying my best. Like, I think that at a certain point, I get to a point where I have to tell people that, yo, they think this is the best I can do. And,
right.
You know, and the thing is that I have already had to deal with the reality of not being accepted in every situation.
Okay.
And that's just a hard reality that just, like, it's really scary for me. I'm like, well, maybe if I can't show, like, maybe there is a job that I literally wouldn't be able to have because mm-hmm. it requires me to show up at 9 o'clock in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe. I mean, honestly, I would think that anything that I would put my mind to, I could do. But, you know, I do take things like that into account. And then also, this is something that happened too, where I shared with JP on this morning in particular that I was able to arrange a meeting with a person because I saw them on my way in. And mm-hmm. I sent this person an email, and they had not responded to my email. But when I saw them in person, just by chance, you know, I got the meeting and got some things got some things rolling. And so for me, kind of my takeaway from that situation was, you know, like, man, I might not show up to work at 9 o'clock in the morning, but I really do try to just stay in tune with the way the world works, and just try to, like, you know, go with the flow, try my best in every single moment, but also don't beat myself up when I don't meet certain standards.
Yeah.
Thank you. I know that was a lot. And I think that a lot comes from, this is just like a personal thing that I literally deal with every day. And it, like, caused a lot of stress because every day I go into work and it's like 9:30 and it's like, man, like, I really wish I was there at 9 o'clock too, because it's like, you know, that stuff matters. So essentially it's just hard. I feel like the not being able to talk about this stuff comes from, okay, I've had this experience every day and I feel really bad about it. And honestly, I don't know what to do except, you know, my best efforts.
That's pretty powerful. That's powerful. And thank you for that answer. Thank you so much, Ezekiel. And again, Sharon, thank you for sharing your time and just your honesty as echoing the other parents. I think this is super important. Okay, thank you.
I have a question for Ezekiel. My daughter is 20 and had a severe suicide attempt in college and was in a medically induced coma for 7 days. So we're grateful that she's alive. She wanted to go back and we allowed her to. So my question is, when you went back to school, did you go back to Swarthmore? And were there any things in place that you would recommend someone have in place to better manage a mental health experience while on campus, fighting back, her way back? And coincidentally, she's also a neuroscience major, so this was really needed for my career.
And maybe she already has this type of person, but a mentor, just somebody who, just a person, and hopefully more than one person. When I was in school, it was really the people that I could go to offices, the people who I was emailing back and forth with throughout the semester were really helpful. And then also, I guess, like, it's just like keep reaching. If I were to tell her any advice, it would just be keep reaching out to people. Just keep learning disabilities office, like counseling services, professors, friends, deans, like literally just as many productive people in her life as possible that she's just like around and that she's just talking to, because that can having like within context support is really helpful.
Thank you so much.
That makes sense.
I just want to tell you and your mom, I'm so proud of both of you. Thank you for sharing and being so open and giving with your thoughts and your heart. It's just, it's absolutely beautiful. I'm really, really proud of you.
Thank you.
Yes, and I don't know either of you, but I just want to thank you as well. It means so much to others who also share your experiences. And I just wanted to give a ray of hope and sunshine here. Both my brother and I have sickle cell. My brother is bipolar. He's older than I. He's almost 70 years old now. He's been married. He has two kids, two girls, and he is a physician. He has a brilliant mind as well. And he has been functional in terms of his own world. So, you know, not everything conforms to what we all think things should conform to, but nonetheless, you know, he's found his way. And I have, in terms of the suicide, I've saved my brother twice. My mother saved him once. Now my parents are gone, so it's just my brother and me. And we have accepted each other. I know him like the back of my hand, as he knows me. It can work, and it can work for years, but it's not a linear path. It's not, you know, what most people think life should look like, but it's still something that you accept and is beautiful. And I love my brother, he, me, and, you know, it's been a tough road, but it's a beautiful road, and I wouldn't trade anything. So I just wanted to share that there's hope for, you know, for people to live a life with this diagnosis and a productive and a good life.
That's so powerful. It's amazing. Thank you so much. I really can't thank you enough, Ezekiel, for sharing and being so open and so honest and so forthright. Really, I think you've helped all of us on the call. And really, you know, just your relationship you and your mom have is something that we all aspire to. So thank you for that. Sharon, do you want to wrap up?
So I want to leave this with you all. It's called the guest house. This being human is a guest house. Every morning, a new arrival, a joy, a depression, a meanness, some momentary awareness comes as unexpected visitor. Welcome and entertain them all. Even if they are a crowd of sorrows who violently sweep your home empty of its furniture, still treat each guest honorably. He may be clearing you out for some new delight. The dark thought, the shame, the malice, meet them at the door, laughing, and invite them in. Be grateful for whoever comes, because each has been sent as a guide from beyond. And this is by Rumi. I just want to say thank you all. Love you guys much. Thank you, Ezekiel.
Thank you so much. Have a beautiful week.
I'm Kelly Richardson Lawson, and you've been listening to the Sunrise Project podcast. You can follow Sunrise wherever you listen to podcasts. If you haven't yet, open your podcast app and follow this show. Join us next week for another gathering of support. Thank you for listening. If you or someone you know is struggling with mental wellness challenges, contact your doctor, NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness, or both. You can reach NAMI's helpline at 800-950-6264, Monday through Friday, 10 a.m. to 8 p.m. Eastern Time, or email at info@nami.org. Volunteers are working to answer questions, offer support, and provide practical next steps.